When I grow up, I'm going to be a vegetarian.
Veterinarian? It's awesome.
And I'm going to be what you said we need more of.
So you want to be a plumber-narian?
Do you think I can?
I think that if you work really hard, you can be anything.
Promise?
You bet I do.
When you promise your kids the world, we're here to help you keep it. Ohio's 529 plan is the best tax-free savings plan for future college or career training nationwide. Start now at collegeadvantage.com.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC. So if you're a regular listener to the station, you're probably familiar with our next guest, but be prepared to meet him in a different context. Matt Katz has been a staple in our station's reporting on criminal justice issues, migration, abuse of power, Chris Christie before that. You may recall his coverage of Christie gained him a Peabody for his reporting on Bridgegate, and he wrote a book about it. Or maybe you've heard him talking more recently about Rikers and seen the exclusive images he uncovered of abused inmates locked in caged showers. He's also sat in this chair as guest host of this show on some of my days off. Today, Matt joins us with his own story. In 2016, he held a call-in on these airwaves and revealed that he was half Irish after doing an Ancestry.com test. Until he had taken that DNA test, he believed that he was 100% Ashkenazi Jewish. How this could have been remained a mystery until now. Over the last 7 years, Matt took on the questions of his paternity and now shares his findings in the podcast Inconceivable Truth, which, by the way, just hit number 10 on all of Apple Podcasts' top shows chart. So we're going to invite your calls on anything similar that may have happened to you and the emotional and even social importance of it. But here's a minute and a half of the trailer from Matt's podcast series.
You knew how to read an analog clock before anybody else of your age because he was always late. And you would always look at the clock. You would know he's supposed to come at 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock came, and he didn't come.
I didn't know where my father, Warren, lived. I didn't have his phone number. I didn't know the truth about him. But all of my questions about who my father was, turns out I wasn't asking the right questions at all. After I took a DNA test, the results blew up my world. That's when I found out that the secrets about my family went far deeper.
This is my question for you. Did you and Warren get any fertility help?
Yeah, we did.
Is it possible there was a sperm donor? I don't think it's my father.
Holy
This guy who caused like so much emotional kind of angst was a stranger to me.
I'm Matt Katz, and I've been a reporter for more than 20 years. But now, I'm on the hardest story I've ever worked on, my own. And what I'm finding out is turning out to be way stranger and more personally intense than anything I've ever investigated before. At the heart of it all is a mystery about my family that I need to solve.
From the trailer of Matt Katz's podcast series, Inconvenient Truth. Now, Inconceivable Truth. Now, at first glance, this seems like a totally personal mystery, but this reporting may be more similar to other stories about abuse of power on Matt's current beat. He joins us now to talk about his findings and the broader story that he's discovered about medical malpractice in New York City. By the way, Matt will be at NYU for an event tomorrow night. I'll say this at the beginning and at the end of the segment. If you want to see him in person, that'll be about audio storytelling. More on that coming up. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Brian. Thank you for doing this. It is surreal to be talking about such personal stuff with you when normally we're just talking about the news.
How'd this happen?
Yeah, so I'll give the 90-second version. I mean, I take a DNA test in 2016. Me and my wife just did this on a whim, curious where in Eastern Europe our people are from. We're both 100% Ashkenazi Jewish. And it comes back, I'm only half Jewish. This doesn't make any sense. I know where both of my biological parents are from. My mom takes the test. She comes back as my mom and 100% Jewish. Suspicions fall on my father, who I'm estranged from. So time goes on, and a year and a half goes by. And then I'm guest hosting the show after yours, the precursor to all of it, the midday show. This is 2018. And the guests ghosted, didn't show up. I was supposed to interview a woman about immigration. And I had to, like, fill airtime. I had to go to callers. So I tell my story, little briefly thing. I'm like, hey, you know, I thought I was 100% Jewish. Now I find out I'm half what turned out to be Irish. That's my family's immigration story. I'm trying to understand it. Do you have any stories of your own? You know, our callers, Brian, our listeners, we had an amazing segment about people's immigration stories.
Yeah.
And then I get an email from a listener. He's like, join this Jewish genealogy Facebook group. I eventually joined this group, and a woman on there known as a search angel, she's like, I can help you solve this mystery. And she goes into my Ancestry.com account where I had taken this DNA test. And she comes back and she says, this is your half-sister. Her name is Tara. She lives in California.
Whoa.
I'm like, what in the world? I'm just trying to find my, like, why I'm half, you know, Jewish and not 100% Jewish. And then she finds a half-sister. So I contact Tara. She doesn't get back to me. I find Tara's Instagram. I message her. She doesn't get back to me. I had just celebrated my 40th birthday. It's July 2018. Tara posts, it's my 40th birthday. So Tara is my half-sister, and she's 2.5 weeks younger than me. This is, as I say in the podcast, an inconceivable truth. It doesn't make any sense. I then sign up for the other DNA test, the DNA account 23andMe, and that's when I meet a second sister, Helena, and she tells me what I now know to be the truth, in that we all have the same father. We were conceived via sperm donor in what proved to be a pretty shady practice in 1977 in Kips Bay in Manhattan. And then I had to figure out what happened, and that's why I made the podcast.
But listening to that clip that we played from the trailer, your mom seemed surprised that Warren, her husband, wasn't your father. So how could she be surprised by that?
Right, right. So, you know, we do not know, like, what happened in this doctor's office in 77, obviously. We do know this. My mother had trouble getting pregnant with her husband at the time. They later divorced. And she went to this doctor who is a fertility specialist. And she remembers that he inseminated her with her husband's sperm, which was the common practice at the time. This is before IVF. This is how it was done. And so the sperm could get closer to the uterus. And that's what she remembers. And then she remembers being told, frankly, to go home and have sex. And that would, you know, make it almost, I guess, stick or something. That was what she remembers. I since did a lot of investigation to understand how she could not know this. And I've read old medical journals. I interviewed the doctor himself, who's still alive. I interviewed him twice. He's in the podcast. And these are the things I learned. First of all, she is not the only woman who did not know she was being inseminated with donor sperm in the 70s and in New York.
Wow.
The reason is doctors were intentionally very secretive about this artificial insemination process in the early days. This is early on when, you know, doctors were first doing this. When they did tell women what they were doing, and most mothers, I I'm aware of did know something. They were instructed to keep this information secret from their children forever. They were told that they would match the looks of the donor with the husband in order to deceive the child. That was not done in my case, by the way. And then one of the common methods at the time was intended to literally trick the parents into thinking that the husband was the actual biological father. And the way they did this was by mixing sperm. They would mix the father's sperm, which they had determined didn't work very well, with good donor sperm. This makes no medical sense, but it was done, according to the doctor, to, you know, trick the couples into having this idea that they were having their own biological kids.
And the impression that I got from one of your episodes is that the doctors in, I guess, the old days, you can tell me if they don't do this anymore. I think they don't do this anymore. But the doctors thought they were doing the family a favor, that it was a benign lie in the interest of not complicating the lives of these couples when they wanted to have a baby. They thought that the secret that they were actually giving, you know, the future child a different biological father than the husband, and they thought they were giving, that they thought they were doing this out of compassion.
Yes, they did. They saw a woman who could not get pregnant, who was desperate to get pregnant. This is, again, before IVF. There were no other methods. And they decided that if the husband believed he was having his own biological kid, if they maybe mixed the sperm and told the couple that the donor sperm is just going to boost the husband's sperm, this is what they would say, it's just going to help it get across the finish line. If they told them these euphemistic lies, the idea was that the father would be more attached to the child and less likely to leave the family. And they were in the process just helping create families. And of course, they never predicted that we would map the human genome and people would be able to find their relatives on something called the internet and determine that these lies existed. So they never thought that they'd be caught, and they never kept any records whatsoever, and they never thought about the kids like me.
Listeners, any similar stories? 212-433-WNYC. We have some people calling in. We'll get a few of these in here. 212-433-WNYC. Call or text with Matt Katz. Robert in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hey. Hey, hi. I just wanted to say, and this is a story because this came up in my own family because a sibling did one of these 23andMe things. And the flip side of what Mr. Katz, I believe, is saying is that I don't care. You know? I don't care. My father is the man who raised me. My mother is the woman who raised me. And I don't care, and I wish my idiot relative had never done this because... You know, what's on a piece of paper and some DNA test doesn't matter to me and shouldn't matter to anyone else. And I understand it does to Mr. Katz. I'm not criticizing him.
Yeah.
But can we try to understand that? And I don't care. And yes. I don't want the people in my family to talk to my children about this so they start thinking weird stuff, you know?
Robert, thank you. And in fact, to this point, Matt, before you respond, I'm going to play a clip. From the podcast, this is your barber, Daryl, saying, you know, why go searching after this revelation to you for who your biological father or donor actually is? Listen.
Let it go. It's not all about cloak and dagger and being, you know, Inspector Clouseau and finding this and find. Some things are not meant to find. And some things want to be private. And some things want to be buried. And by digging them up, you open yourself up to a lot of hurt, a lot of harm.
All right, Matt, talk to our caller, Robert, and your barber, Daryl.
Sure. Listen, and I absolutely agree with Robert. It doesn't actually matter. I go through extensively in the podcast how my mom's second husband, Richard, who adopted me, I changed my last name to Katz, because it's Richard's last name, and how much he is my dad. I call him dad to this day. He's my father, and whoever this donor father is or was, that is not my dad. And so I absolutely get that and go through it extensively. However, you know, everybody else in this world knows who their biological almost everybody, I should say, knows who their biological parents are. And I think when that truth exists out there, when other people know it's a truth, then the child should know. Secondly, medical information. I mean, there are donor-conceived mm-hmm. children who have found out later in life that they were donor-conceived, and they have the same conditions that their father died from. This is information people should know. And the third thing I would say is that the most magical part of this whole process for me, and again, the podcast is about my search for the identity of my biological father, but in the process, I find three half-siblings. And that has been so wonderful and so enriching to my life and their lives. We have this relationship. We have a daily text chain. And that's something that I think I should know and have the right to know. And again, a child who doesn't want to pursue that, a donor-conceived child, I get that. But for me and for most others, it's really important.
I have my own story on the edges of this, believe it or not, which is that I got contacted only about 2 years ago by somebody who lives in England who's about my age, and he says, "Hello, I'm your first cousin." And I only discovered that recently through kind of something similar to what you went through. And he was contacting the various people, there are a bunch of us, who would be his first cousin, you know, from one of my uncles. And he wants to get to know some of his pretty close biological relatives. So this happens.
I have gotten so many messages from people with different but a little bit similar situations. Long-lost relatives, adoptees looking for their parents, stepfathers who become real fathers. I mean, so much of that. People can relate to pieces of this story.
Let's see. Anthony in Fort Greene, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share my story as being an adopted child. In 1961, my adopted family adopted me from Catholic Charities. And my family was always very transparent about our adoption, and we were never treated any differently by the rest of our family. And we were brought up being very proud of our Italian immigrant history. And I always thought about who gave birth to me on my birthday, wondering who she was, knowing how difficult it probably was for her. And I did a DNA test and submitted it. And I wasn't so interested, or I was nervous about meeting other family members because I didn't know what was going to be behind that door. I was curious about where my family came from, where my biological family came from. And and one day I forgot to toggle private. And just within 2 days, I get a message from a woman, Kate, who's says that, it looks like we are really close relatives, and like up to like first cousins or more. And I was like, oh, okay. And we met. And she did. She had been in touch with. We met, and she had been in touch with her birth family. And had met them.
And were you
in contact with them?
Anthony, I hate to cut you short, but there's one other call have to get in before we end. And was it a good? But just tell me, was it a good experience? Are you glad?
It was. I learned that she studied art history. I'm an artist and an educator. She's an educator, museum.
And those connections get made. And the same thing happened with my long-lost cousin who showed up, found that he does a lot of the same things as some of the other cousins. Anthony, thank you. But, Matt, we're getting a call from George in County Cork, Ireland, which is actually where your biological father came from, right?
Yes,
George,
yes,
you're on WNYC.
Correct.
We have 1 minute for you before the end of the show. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. I'm calling from County Cork in Ireland, native New Yorker here. And 6 months ago, I discovered through ancestry DNA testing that I have a half-brother I never knew existed. My mom, who was a teacher back in the mid-50s, became pregnant and unmarried and went to California with her mother, and where she delivered my half-brother, and it turns out we lived only a few blocks from each other in San Francisco and no people in common.
And I have to leave it there, George. I apologize. And obviously we could keep going with this. But the moral of the story is you probably want to tune into Matt's podcast series,
yes.
Inconceivable Truth, and find out the end, the ending of the story. And you can also meet Matt in person because he's doing an event tomorrow night at NYU, 7 o'clock, Tuesday night, tomorrow night. And you're going to be talking about the podcast and using podcasting as a medium for personal storytelling, Matt?
That's right. And just got to register at journalism.nyu.edu. Just scroll down to events. It's free. We'd love to talk to everybody about their experiences.
Journalism.nyu.edu. Thanks, Matt. Amazing series. Keep it up.
Thank you so much, Brian.